Sci-fi party line.
Hi, and welcome to the Sci-Fi Party Line. Kat isn't here this week. She's off being studious. I'm Will, and that's Carl. Hi, Carl.
What's happening, Will? Good to talk with you again.
Yay. Yes. So we're doing Doctor Who this week. We're doing the two episodes of Doctor Who, The Hide and The Journey to the Center of the TARDIS.
Woo.
Yes, yes. If you... Let's just jump right in. Let's get right into the events here. What did you think of Hyde?
Hyde. It started strong.
Mm-hmm.
Left me with some questions.
I had a couple myself. I really liked the episode. I like how it went. I like the concepts in there. But what were your high points about the episode?
Well, okay. The thing that I guess is classic about Doctor Who and what I've always enjoyed is when the episode starts, you have no idea where the episode is going. I mean, you just don't know. You can sense a certain peril pending.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, your heroes are in trouble, but you can't quite piece together what the nature of the problem is. And so, you know, it felt like a classic kind of a haunted house story. And I was really, really digging the sort of classic, like, you know, Exorcist kind of thing. It really,
it really,
yeah. I mean, they really held true to the old timey, you know, paranormal stuff with a little touch of Ghostbusters with the, you know, the 1970s gear thrown in there,
yeah.
Which was fun. So I liked how that started, but you knew, you know, it's never as simple as that when it comes to Doctor Who. It's never, you know, it's not just going to be paranormal and an actual ghost was going to appear. No, you know, it had to be something tricky. So, the pending doom, the peril was exciting. How they managed to hold true to the spirit of a ghost story really, really was great. And I enjoyed seeing the Doctor in that situation. So, I think that was the first, you know, the major thing that I really enjoyed in terms of tone.
Yeah, I liked the tone especially. It was, again, you know, you have the peril and the, you know, the overall, you know, events of the story, which were pretty cool. I liked when the woman who played from Call the Midwife calls
the psychic lady.
Yeah, the psychic lady. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Emma, I think Emma was her
Emma. Emma from Call the Midwife. She's on that show. Which is actually pretty cool. I've watched that a little bit. But there's a thing where it's like, oh, you didn't come here to do the psychic thing. You came to ask me a question or something. I liked the idea of that. Mm-hmm. And I got more into that in Journey to the Center of the TARDIS. But the idea of, you know, he's doing what he needs to do to figure out, again, the mystery. That aspect is really interesting. But I gotta say, this episode, the pacing, much better than the last episode, the last two episodes.
True.
Yes, I mean, like, it's like, wait a minute, it actually fits in the episode. And like, oh, by the way, that fitting in the episode actually left enough time to have the next time on the Doctor Who, which was interesting to me.
Yeah, they were really, really cramming it in before, so, yeah.
That was cool. But, and I, see, now I'm a sucker for the, oh gosh darn it, you know, love will come through and yay. And it's like, everybody's been, you know, they've been saying this all over the web. Let's have a story where the ultimate solution isn't love. And it's like, okay, no, I'm not gonna say that. Because I like that aspect.
The Doctor has always been a lover, not a fighter. So, I mean, really, that's the way it's going to go. It's either going to be a beautiful love story somehow hidden in there, or a triumphant soliloquy where, you know, the Doctor stands punching his fist in the air, you know, at some monster or whatever, and the monster's like, you know, I hadn't considered that. And the end. You know, that's so it's going to be one of those two. But love amongst the monsters is how that works.
Well, so, I like aspect of the show, too, because, you know, going back to my episodes that I really liked, which were Tom Baker, which we'll talk about in a while, but there's that aspect to the show, Tom Baker and, to a certain extent, John Pertwee. The thing was, it isn't the monster you think it is, it's the monster that it figured, that isn't the green slime, it's the guy who's running the evil corporation. You know what I mean? It's not that aspect, it's the evil human.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I like that. They don't do that anymore. Not as much.
Yeah, the villainous misdirection or a strong sympathy in the end for the villain is kind of hallmark for for a lot of Doctor Who, because it always gets you to ask questions, you know, about what you think you've seen in terms of perception. Things are changing around in terms of motivation. Things are always changing around, and as part of that's one of the historic ways that Doctor Who comes to resolution is it's rarely with a weapon of some kind. Or, you know, anything major. It's always with some sort of, I'm not going to say psychological resolution, but you're trying to figure out what the motivations of the villain are, and once you understand that, then it's not so much you got to kill the person.
Right.
It's something deeper than that.
You have to reason around it or through it, not necessarily have the, oh, well, this monster, we must explode it, or we must throw weapons at it.
Our hero carries a screwdriver.
Exactly.
So,
this is the point. This is the point that I'm going for.
He likes to fix things.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. That's the whole thing. The story in overall, I like the story. It wasn't the ending of the story. I wasn't like, oh, damn, what a terrible ending of the story. I like that aspect of it. There's two parts and there's a gap and it's the story and, oh, I see what we're doing there. Yeah. I like that aspect. Did you have a problem with that or not?
The one problem I have with it is it felt like 2 to 3 totally separate stories kind of, you know, duct taped together. You know, on their own, each piece I kind of appreciated and, you know, didn't feel out of the universe or anything. Each piece felt all right. You know, the paranormal love story, lost time traveler, monster love. All right. Each of those things separately, they felt all right, but somehow they didn't quite flow together in the episode. I mean, you know, there's a moment when the time traveler has fallen into the 1970s, you know, hallway, atrium, the main area.
Mm-hmm.
She feels out of place, not just because of the time difference, but just story-wise, it literally felt like she was kind of dropped down in there. And with that awkwardness in place, then you still have ghost monsters running around. I'm used to the sort of insanity of Doctor Who where stuff is going on in totally different, you know, perpendicular directions. But somehow it just felt more cohesive in the past. Something about the elements of the story didn't quite fit together in a way that felt, well, you know, natural, I guess. So, you know, and again, also, it kind of felt like the elements of this were familiar. You know, maybe a little bit Blink in there, maybe a little bit of Lost Astronaut. You know, just little stuff that felt like we'd seen it before, and didn't quite flow, in terms of the word. So, like I said, as the story's coming to an end, and we're thinking that things are over, you're like, well, what are they gonna do with her? Now, what are they gonna say about this? They're recording, and it just didn't quite, you know, it just didn't quite sink for me. But like I said, the emotional impact of a lot of the things that happened in the story, of course, the love between the scientists was fun. Trying to, you know, understand, okay, well, maybe now that the time traveler, she can get some peace now. okay, the monsters have a certain resolution. Love amongst the monsters, oh, isn't that sweet? You know, they're holding hands off in the distance. You know, each of these things separately kind of felt alright, but something just didn't, it just didn't flow when they came together.
I had a few problems with the overall concept, being that it was pretty damn obvious what was going to happen.
Okay.
You know, it was like...
Well, other than the monsters. Now, did you see the monsters coming? I didn't see the monsters. I mean, in terms of the resolution of the monsters.
Of course I saw the monsters.
Really? Okay. All right. I didn't see it till the end.
The fact that there were two monsters, yeah, that threw me. Okay, that threw me one. But the aspect of... Of course, you two get married and have a kid, and then
That part was okay, but I did like the rope-a-dope of the episode not quite ending. You know, where you're thinking, oh, everything is fine.
Wait, you know, that's about 10 minutes left here. What's wait a minute, there's an ending. I see. Yeah,
right.
I like that. I like the idea. The few like middly little problems. What was Claire doing flying the TARDIS? And then in the next episode, she has to put on the training wheels. Wait a minute. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
I generally liked Hyde a lot, but let's move on to Journey to the Center of the TARDIS. TARDIS.
Okay. All right. So...
A lot of questions on this one.
Here's my biggest problem with Journey to the Center of the TARDIS. Mm-hmm. How long have we waited for this episode? Yeah. I mean, honestly, tour of the TARDIS. I mean,
well, Invasion of Time, actually.
Probably a little before it, actually. A little before that, really.
Before that, yeah.
I mean, I really, really have looked forward to this. This, you know, combined with the fact that we got to meet the persona of the TARDIS, these two things put a whole lot of pressure on what this episode should have been.
Yes.
Well, I'll get back to that. So, just a little thing, but, so the premise, for starters, kind of bothered me. You know, I mean, the fact that a magnetic grappling hook can take down the TARDIS, even when the shields are down.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't mean in a little way. The TARDIS wasn't just limping.
No, it was dead.
The engine implosion, because it got hit with a little, you know, EM field, and that did not look like the strongest ship that took them down either.
No, it wasn't.
So, I'm just going with the initial premise. I was a little put off by that, because the TARDIS that we have known and loved is not going to be taken down by a tractor beam.
The other thing about that was earlier in the episode, the Bells of St. John, he actually says the TARDIS is the most powerful machine in the universe. I'm not going to take it in the battle. And he gets knocked down by a magnetic grapple. Wait a minute. Hold on. Time out here.
The machine deserved a whole lot more respect than that. I mean, that's just me putting it on there.
Yeah, me too. But something should
have happened. I mean, you know, I mean, they could have done all kinds of crazy. Remember that cool episode of Farscape where, you know, Moya's flying along, and then that dimensional ship appears and lodges in the side of Moya? You know, if it had been something of that scale, maybe if TARDIS tripped over itself in another timeline, bam, and you got two TARDIS lodged together. I mean, granted, that would have been Farscape-y, but at least...
No. I like the idea of that, and I like the fact you called it TARDIS.
Not
the TARDIS, TARDIS.
Of course, that's a formal.
Bravo for your use of jargon.
Yeah. But, you know, we really needed something realer to damage.
That part I didn't like.
Yeah.
I didn't like the ending of the, and by the way, we'll reset everything so nothing in the episode counts.
That is a mighty cheap way to do it.
I have to say, finally, this is the time travel you know, this is the not Moffat in doing this episode, obviously, so it's not actually, I'm not blaming him, although he did approve it. but my own premise is, really, we're going to do all that? It's like there was the episode of Star Trek where they had the Year of Hell, I think it was called. Where the literally
Voyager?
Yeah, Voyager. Yes, yes, it was right. Voyager, and they had the giant ship that kind of looked like Babylon 5, really, but not really, and they blew the whole thing up, and at the end of the episode, it reset, it went right back to the beginning. It's
okay.
Like, what are you doing to me? What? No.
It's a little too easy. It really, and of course, I mean, given the fact,
exactly,
come on,
yeah.
Doctor Who is the master of time, and I don't mean the character, I mean the show.
The show.
It's really a classic master of time travel.
Okay, I will tell you this. This episode, or you know, these episodes in particular, Moffat has been experimenting with time travel. He really has. And, you know, there was the time and space episodes, you know, from the Children's Need. There was the end of the world, you know, end of the world. There were all these episodes where he's played with the concept of time travel really effectively. And now this one is like, oh no, you just hurried it up and just, oh no. You've taken all the premises, you know, the premise of time travel, and you've used it as a cheap joke.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It's like, don't do that. That's not a good thing.
I agree. You know, all I'm saying is, well, Doctor Who is known, I mean, the story-wise as well as the characters, being a master of time. You know,
yes.
you the things that they have done with time travel in the stories in the past, and of course, you know, my favorite is the super arc with, you know, Pond and all of that.
Yes.
I mean, come on, if you can do that with time travel, and I mean in terms of writing time travel, you can give me a season-long arc with interweavings of characters forward,
fall back,
and all this stuff. Don't give me a big fat button at the end of the episode.
Literally, an
actual button.
What the hell is that?
That is actually
a button at the end that says universe reset. What the hell is that?
That is not good. That is really, really not good.
Having said that, I really like what they did in the episode.
All right, well, you tell me then. I need you. So you tell me why.
Okay.
What did you like?
All right. I liked, even if it was just a shot, I loved the library. I loved the pool, you know, all of the events in the TARDIS.
When you say the pool.
The pool.
What scene was that? Where was the pool?
There was a pool. She kind of walked by the pool and said, oh, look, there's a pool. I know it was but it's like, oh, it's a pool. Look, there's a pool. There's the thing.
Okay, so
I would have wanted her to walk through the pool.
I mean,
I understand the economics of the situation.
No, ain't no economics. If you're going to do an episode during TARDIS, you know, we want to see something.
Okay, one thing. Good thing. It wasn't the doctor walking through the St. James, some hospital. He walked through the pool. I'm the pool. You know, it's like, I actually think the Vision of Time had where they walked through actual different buildings to get the feel of it. It didn't work in the Invasion of Time because it went from videotape to film to videotape. Don't do that. I think actually had they done it with an actual pool and with, you know, throw up some blue screen and just had like for even 30 seconds or even just filmed a pool, filmed a pan of a pool, and she's walking through, that would have been much cooler.
In
this event. But, okay, I can understand why it was a matte painting. I know, you know, we do the special effects, we understand the special effects, don't like it, but I understand it.
No. That's not, like I said, if you're going to have an episode where you're going
goddamn pull.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And by the way, given that it's TARDIS, should it have been an infinity pool? All right. Anyway, moving on. But I really thought that there should have been some element, some consistent element among the different parts of the TARDIS to let you know it was the TARDIS. I mean, again, this is just another nitpicky thing. It's clear that they could just drop them in different places. Ooh, we're in the library. Ooh, we're on a ledge. Ooh, we're at a pool. But it seemed like because the fact that this was so important and, we waited so long for this, that there should have been some consistent thread, one little iconic thing.
I agree.
That held between each of the, remember early on when one of the Tardi was, that had a working chameleon circuit was the pillar?
Yes.
You know, it's like a Roman pillar.
Yeah.
If there had just been like a Roman pillar throughout each one, it was like sort of like the remote for TARDIS as you went.
Exactly.
Just something that tied all of the pieces together. I think that would have been cool.
No, I agree. I agree with that.
To go from the Jeffrey's tubes, which was three quarters of the episode,
that was one set of Jeffrey's tubes.
That, yes, and they went forward,
round.
They moved the beam a little. All this time they shot a rock.
This went up. They had short quarters and long quarters.
Yeah.
Like one had to be east and west, and the other had to be north and south. It had to be that.
Slightly different lighting, but
yeah,
so, I mean,
exactly,
so,
yeah, yeah.
So that, I mean, given the scale of the fact that we have known and loved the TARDIS, I mean, TARDIS as machine and person,
right?
I really thought that they were going to give us a greater feel for her in this episode, and it really felt kind of like running through the hallways, and
yeah.
that
was my problem with the episode. But I have to say, I liked the leaking of the events where he's talking, where, it's Ian, it's Tom Baker, it's a bunch of stuff.
That was nice.
I like the idea. I like the history of the Time War. My God, hello. So wait a minute. So you have a Time Lord in the TARDIS, you have the history of the Time War. So you had that there while they were fighting the Time War? So you know what was going to happen? So why didn't the doctor... See, it's a... And
in
essence of all the Time Lord lore, the Britannica, kind of the stuff... Britannica, yes. Which is cool. I loved all that stuff. That was really... And again, I think they went to an actual library for that. That's just me.
It was nice. Whatever, yeah. It felt good.
But I liked it. Ultimately, I have to say, I liked the aspects of the story, but I... And there are a ton, a literal metric crap ton of questions, like where are people? What's the event? What do you mean that's Clara? I don't understand that aspect of it. And if they just go, oh yeah, it was a time thing, and it goes, it was like, no, that doesn't work. Maybe those creatures actually are in the events of the TARDIS, but probably not. And I'm like, ah, damn it. I so wanted to adore this episode, and I didn't. This is the first episode, I'm going to say, well, what's impossible except for another pirate episode, that I did not like.
Really?
I know.
Well, now,
this is radical. Yes.
Look, I mean...
Didn't like it. Sorry.
The things I'm not going to argue with you. I'm not going to argue with you because, again, dealing with expectations is important. All right.
Right.
I know you're supposed to go into this, whether you're a fan or, a new viewer, like each episode stands on its own and is trying to take us someplace new. But I'm telling you, if you're going to do an episode about the exploration of TARDIS, you cannot skimp on that. You cannot wrap it up with a button. You gotta give us a villain or an antagonist of sufficient scale to make this meaningful. As we're going through the episode and we begin to see the lava time monsters, you know, or whatever you want to call them, the Roxley stack or whatever. As we're wandering through, you're looking at the Doctor, and his reaction to them does a good job of making you concerned. The way he's reacting to it, you're like, geez, you know, what's loose in the TARDIS? Like, he's known for a long time that, you know, yeah, I knew I shouldn't have opened that room in the back of the library.
They shouldn't be there, but it's a thing, but it's not a thing, but don't worry about it.
And then when we find out what they actually are, you're like, wait a minute.
Hello, no.
It totally throws the sense of what the Doctor knew about them, when he knew that about them, how dangerous they really were. I mean, if he could play it like they had been in the TARDIS loose for like 100 years, and now all of a sudden he realizes who they are, maybe that could have worked. But that is not how. Oh man, and the way that they that crappy fighting against the time loop thing they did on the ledge. I mean, on the catwalk.
Right.
With you two can't stand together, so the time won't repeat. Standing together is what's going to, or standing apart is what's going to keep the time loop from recycling.
Right.
Come on.
Doesn't make sense. Yeah.
Come on, Doc.
Well, the other thing is, like, you know, I can't tell you what the problem is. I know what I, as a doctor, I know what the problem is. Can't tell you. But it was there already.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, so wait a minute. What you're saying is the people in the TARDIS get fried because they're people in the TARDIS. Right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So that means that having people in the TARDIS, in TARDIS literally means that you potentially will kill them. It's the aspect of, the TARDIS, TARDIS being all things at all times, it gets its tenses wrong.
Yeah.
So those creatures were there because they were always there.
If we could feel that, if they had articulated that,
it would have been
a tolerable villain or, you know, whatever, but I didn't
even
have sense.
Not even a villain. Yeah, exactly. So it's like, wait a minute, so what, are we going to go back and cover things? Are we going to do, I don't know. And I did not like the episode.
Well,
I'm
with you.
I'll probably watch it again.
Of course. There are little elements of it that are fun to watch. You go back and, and like you said, the whispers of the past Time Lord, that was
like
really,
that,
really
yes.
beautiful. So, you know, that was great. There are pieces of it that are great, but you gotta manage expectations. For them to think that an episode called Journey to the Center of the TARDIS, they're just gonna be able to, whip that past us, as fans. we don't really have to dot the I.
Look, see, it's a huge star. It's the Eye of Harmony. Oh, don't worry about the rest of the plot. But look, it's the Eye of Harmony, isn't it?
Yeah, everyone stop at the grandeur,
That's amazing, cause it's the Eye of Harmony. No.
I even kind of like the Matrix scene where they go in and the heart of the engine has begun exploding, and they wander in. I liked the stillness and the quietness of that. But at the same time, the thing I really bothered me also is we got to know TARDIS as a character.
Right.
Her presence was absent in the entire episode.
Exactly.
Really, you did not feel the other than, the tentacle egg is being stolen and the door is mad. No.
No, I like that aspect. I like the concept of that.
But the concept
of that really works. Unfortunately, they ham-fistedly didn't.
Really. We're just going to keep moving walls around.
And that's
going to be the extent of our. So, I am with you. It's not my favorite episode. Not because I thought it was horrible, because I'm just really, really disappointed. Given the scale of TARDIS, we cannot expect everything to be
okay. All right. But all right, I have a question.
Yes. All right. Yeah.
Now, given the title, given the anticipation of the story,
yeah,
could you have done this well?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Right.
Could
you have done it well in an hour?
Well, yes. Here's how. There is a thread that we could have followed here. Let me back up and be a little clear about this. They took the easy way out with a lot of things in this episode. I mean, you want to talk Jeffrey's tube run, monsters running, the space salvage folks. Any one of those story elements could have simply just been taken out and focused more. Make this a love letter to the fans.
Make it a Clara and Doctor episode. No, make it a Clara Doctor and a bunch of goons to come around through things.
If you call it a Journey to the Center of the TARDIS, one episode where they truly explore the machine being. You know, you don't have to be chased by Sleestat. You don't have to keep running down the same hallway again and again.
Right.
We would have loved to gotten a sense again with the one episode where we see the embodied TARDIS and she's talking with the Doctor and all of that. If we could have again felt that emotional connection of the machine and somehow embracing them as a character, even if we never see her, you know, just somehow that we get a real sense that the journey to the center of the TARDIS is we as fans and the Doctor getting to know the vehicle, the being better, and truly giving a chance for him to save her finally.
Right.
That could have been emotionally powerful and simple. Time loop, you know, none of that. Of course, when TARDIS is injured, you got to have time something. But you didn't
I would say that you, again, because the TARDIS has no sense of future past at all.
Yep.
It all happens at the same time. That you could use that aspect, because it's like the control room is okay, but as you get further in the TARDIS, things happen at exactly the same time.
Of course.
And as you get closer again, if you get closer to the TARDIS to the center, all things are going to be happening at all times. See, that aspect that would have been great if you could have used that.
And that
theory,
all fans would have expected that. I mean,
exactly.
Really, the echoey stare, I mean, echoey copies of Doctors of multiple times wandering around, the echo, that everybody totally expected that. Engine breach, that's what it's going to be like. But you don't need monsters chasing you. You don't need, leading the dedicated crew of the salvage ship around. The B-plot was interesting.
Have people die.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why have that?
See, yeah, that's it.
That's the thing. The ultimate thing that you don't actually need is people to die, because it's like it's almost as if, well, we're more sophisticated now, we kill people. No. Why have that? Why not have this incredible being with immeasurable powers reason his way through? Why not? That's the point. That's the Doctor.
Look,
that's Tom Baker. That's who the Doctor was.
He managed to save Kylie Minogue, so that's all I'm saying.
But he didn't save Kylie Minogue!
I'm
agreeing with you. But, I don't know. But anyways, so did you get to see the Fourth Doctor, through all the Doctors episode of the
Sadly,
Fourth Doctor?
Sadly, no, and what bothers me most, Tom Baker's my favorite. Tom Baker's always been my favorite Doctor.
Me too.
I was introduced kicking and screaming by friends of mine who sat me down way back when I was in high school.
What episode? What was your first episode? Ha ha ha.
Let me think.
The first episode I saw was Inferno, which is Jem Pertwee, but I fell in love with Tom Baker.
I'm pretty sure, because they started me on a high note, and this was back in the day with, quote, and you see I'm doing the double finger, video cassettes.
What are these video cassettes of which you speak?
Yes. I think we had a hand crank to operate the device.
Dude, I actually had a put the tape in and push it down.
Push it down. Me too. With the wired remote on it. You know,
Yes,
I'm there with you, man. It's probably the same one with the wood panel on it.
That's the one. Yes. Yeah.
But so yes, they sat me down and they wanted to make sure I saw a good episode. So they said they got me down. They said, "All right, we're going to sit down." And they said, "We're going to watch an episode called Genesis of the Daleks."
Yes. Okay. Yes. That's a good one.
And so so you got to remember, I am, you know, of the Star Wars generation. And when I say that, I don't mean that it was my absolute favorite. What that means is, just from birth, I was raised on the quality, pacing, and speed, and quality of special effects that you experience in Star Wars.
Right.
So for me, that was my first real voyage into advanced sci-fi. So after that, whenever I look back at classic science fiction, when I first looked at Star Trek original series, when people try to give me Doctor Who, I'd look at it and I would see, you know, zippers and people. This is the most utter crap, you know, so it took me a while to embrace all of those classic, you know, science fiction. But what happened is, and they got me here too, once I sat down and I stopped laughing, you know, at the eye in the middle of Davros's head, you know, I really got into the story and I got into the character and I realized there weren't going to be any lightsabers and, you know, and laser blasts and it pulled me
really cheap laser blasts.
Oh man, yeah, I mean there was
Chiron. Come on, it's a Chiron machine. What the hell are you doing?
It looked like someone threw a sparkler at him, really.
No, actually they've done that several times where they kick the sparkle in front of the Chiron. That's the thing.
But the story pulled me in. The zaniness of the Doctor. So he was my first, just the utter insanity of not knowing what the heck was going on and realizing that is an element of the story. You know, I got to know what he's doing and what's going on pretty much till the end. Get used to it. But I thought Baker did that with the most fun, I mean, genuine fun and style and playfulness of any other doctors. And so that's what connected me to who, and then all the others I kind of, you know, measured fairly or not.
Well,
it kind of
goes downhill from here, actually. I like Sylvester McCoy. I like him.
Oh, okay.
And McGann. I like McGann. And then, of course, I like all the modern doctors. But Baker, Peter Davis, okay, maybe. But it was kind of, you know, Baker was such a huge star that you get somebody who's lesser than him,
mm-hmm.
you know, just as the character. I mean, I've seen him in other things, Tom Baker or Peter Davison. He's a very good actor. I like his work, but you know, it's just Doctor Who. But amazingly enough, my absolute favorite episode of Doctor Who is the episode they played this week, The Pyramids of Mars, because this has the aspect ratio where I don't know if you remember this, but there's a part in the show where they rush into the TARDIS to get away from, you know, the marauding robots.
Mm-hmm.
And Sarah Jane goes, "Why don't we go home? Why don't we just, you know, because we did this and, you know, we can go home." And, the doctor goes, "Why?" Because the world didn't, you know, he's basically, well, if we don't stop Sutak, he's going to destroy the world. And he's like, "What, he didn't, did he? You know, I come from 1980. It's cool." And he goes, "Okay." Open the door. There's 1980 for you, and it's a desolate. It's the effect. It's when you're there, when you're in that aspect of when you hit that aspect, that thing that is time, you then rewrite everything. Time can be rewritten. And it's amazing. It's so subtle and so powerful. Again, using time travel to as a plot point, not as an out.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the aspect. I absolutely love the episode. Tom was on the show, and he was just going gaga. he's the first doctor who's been on one of his specials, because he's the oldest one who's alive, and it was amazing. And this reminded me how much I love Tom Baker.
Yeah.
It was so cool.
And you gotta respect.
You'll be on a million more times. You should definitely catch it.
Sure. But you got, yeah, no, I'm definitely gonna check it. I'm sorry. I should have watched it before we did the show. I've been so busy. But the other thing is, you gotta respect the classic sci-fi actors who still have a love for the show. I can't tell you how tired I am of these, okay actors who, gain incredible stardom.
Of course, what we're doing isn't science fiction. Yes, it is, you idiot.
I mean,
the other thing I have to tell you this real quick aside. Tennant, David Tennant.
Yes.
They're talking about the Zygons, right?
Okay, right.
And he goes, well, the Zygons, when we first meet them, because they're in the 50th episode, and he's shooting the 50th episode now. When we first meet them, like, yes, consider this a human thing.
Okay, yeah. See, spoilers. Cool. No,
well, they've shown the design, they've shown the character.
I know. But so all I'm saying is, I like it when your original actors still have a respect and a genuine appreciation and love for the show that put them on the map. Because if you look throughout, the history, you're always going to get that, Denise Crosby thing. But you're looking at him and you're like, don't you realize that if it hadn't have been for this show, for that crazy episode, for you walking around with a rubber thing plastered to your forehead, that no one would know who you are.
Right.
And that people, despite, all that you've done, still care for you and what that character has meant to them.
Yeah.
For you to then go back and go, it was just a little thing I did, for a summer or whatever, and I don't know. That's so disappointing.
Of course they didn't get into this stupid play stuff. It's like, dude, everything you do is play.
Yeah.
Everything you do, it doesn't matter if it's House or, Chuckleberries or it doesn't matter. You're out there playing a role. If you get ray guns, that's the only difference.
Whether it's about making the characters feel real.
Exactly.
And I don't care if you got a third hand growing out of the back of your head. You got to make it real. And if you don't, that's on you. Because the best example of that is, we're looking at classic Doctor Who. The terrible special effects.
Zero special effects.
But man, I felt for them characters. Like you said, from the beginning, we had an appreciation for the twist and perception of what made someone a villain. Those bad guys were great back in the day. And they made it real for us.
You actually those characters come. They came through the effects. They came
the plastic mask, the dryer hose coming out.
Sutek, you look at Sutek's mask, it's plastic. It's like, what the hell is this? But it's colorful, it works, the eyes are kind of Egyptian eyes. Okay, it's working for me. I see it's working for me.
It's so dark.
Yeah, but you look at the character actors, and they have these bizarre situations. And actually, it goes from like seven people all the way down to two, Sarah Jane and the Doctor. And that's it. You actually, if you think about it, wait a minute, they killed everyone. And you go, oh my God, this is actually, this has tension, it builds, there's story aspects which are just incredible. You have the dead man who confronts his brother and he has conflict. It's like, what the hell's going on? And I will say it again, I'm going back to this, the aspect of, it's four episodes, it's a long thing.
Well, that's like two modern episodes, so it would have been...
Yeah, but the thing is, that's the thing, it's a full two-story arc.
Oh, yeah.
And that, I think, I believe, I will say this to my Dying Day, that that makes for a better episode. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that I don't know anything about it, but I'm hoping that the 50th anniversary is at least two episodes.
Now, so now we've had this discussion before about, you know, whether more time would make things better. But let me ask you a question, because here's my issue.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at Hyde, if you look at what was the one before Hyde,
the Cold War.
Yeah, Cold War. Do you really think more time would have made those episodes? I'm telling you now.
I honestly believe that. The stories are structured in such a way that it's plot point, plot point, plot point, plot point, plot point. This aspect ratio Pyramids of Mars is literally, there's a prequel where they go to Egypt. I'm like, okay. Oh, dude, they're going to Egypt. Oh, this is cool. And then they're in the TARDIS. And it's about, I don't know, 7 or 8 minutes before you're actually in the story. And it's like, oh, yeah, okay, this is cool. I see where you're going with this. But it's not like plot point, plot point, plot point. It's like, oh, here's the thing. Oh, that's interesting. And, oh, it's some stuff with a doctor. And, of course, Tom Baker has this great soliloquy on, you know, I transcend time. I've lived for 750 years. And it's really, you know, it's an amazing piece of story, which is interrupted by a plot point.
that's okay. That's
exactly. But that's the thing. It flows through. It's not like, TARDIS appears, Doctor runs out, oh my god, we're going to crash. And it's not all that condensed in 3 minutes. It's, you know, oh, this is weird. We're in the same location, just in a different point in time. Oh, maybe this is the Priory. Yeah, this could be the Priory. And they're talking about explaining all this thing, but it wasn't like, oh, this must be the Priory, because, you know, 35 years, you know, it wasn't like, rush, get all the plot out. That's my whole aspect ratio. And if you took a breath and went, okay, this is the story. Look at Sherlock. Sherlock's are an hour and a half. And they work. They work at an hour and a half. Because you start to explain things, but not like simplistically explain things. You have time to explain things. So you're not rushing rushing all these things out, but you're going through it slowly and methodically. And that's what I believe we're missing from the new Doctor Who. And this goes all the way back to Run. This is all the way back to the first episode, and it was pressing all the episodes together. I mean, when you get a couple episodes, you know, the Time Lords, and, you know, the end of everything, and all that aspect ratio, you know, all those aspects where, you know, they took an actual, you know, a story and ran over three episodes, which is good, and there's room in there. Or they ran, you know, like the thing with the Master was over three episodes, you know, that was good too. Mm-hmm. I liked that, and there was like the last. What was it? Four? Was it? Yeah, like, you know, like three. The last three episodes were actually one chunk of episode, cut up into three parts. See, that's what I like. And to me, in my opinion, there is no reason you couldn't do that. You should be able to do that.
Well, okay, now and I agree with you. I'm just gonna put the caveat in there, mm-hmm, that it seems like. I'm gonna come out and say it. Those episodes, it felt like the writing was stronger. It wasn't a pacing thing. It just felt like the writing was stronger in those.
I'm going to tell you this.
All right.
In my opinion, two things. One, it ultimately comes down to, you know, the writing is weak, right? Well, we've seen Steve Moffat. Well, like his second episode was a two-parter, mm-hmm, by the way. You know, it was, you know, the Doctor Dances and the other one. I can't remember the other one's name. But it was a two-parter.
Right, okay.
Perfect. So if you watch that episode, you're like, oh, yeah, that I see the aspect ratio. I see, you know, how you're working that. And that works fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then Blink. Blink works because it's the way it's condensed, the way it's set up. But as you get into these more episodes where you're trying to get more and more more and more storytelling into the same aspect ratio, the same story ratio,
yeah,
it starts to fall apart. And not because Stephen Moffat, oh, see, he lost his mind and he isn't a good writer now. No, you look at it, you go, no, wait, this is a really good writer. You know, the guy who writes Luther did an episode. It's an amazing, amazing writer. But that's, and he does it, but he's got his stories are two-hour stories, you know, and he's trying to pare it down to one story. And it's like, he can't, because he has ideas, and he puts the ideas together, and he's got a 20, you know, he's got a two-hour story and a one-hour.
All right, well, I hear what you're saying. I'm going to keep watching to see what they do, because yeah. We'll give it time.
And I that.
Thank you, everyone. Yes, that's.
Yes. So yes, so that's our little party line aspect show for this week. Hopefully, we'll be back in a couple more weeks, probably two more weeks, where we're gonna watch. You know, we're gonna watch the last three episodes, and we'll probably do that as a single chunk. I'm thinking. Or maybe we won't, you know, because we do have the name of the doctor is coming up.
Oh, yes. And of course, then we will hopefully be graced by the lovely cat, who will by then be fashionista and, you know, chief designer on the electric runway of New York. So, well, that'll be great to see.
This is a great summer. We've got a lot of shows coming out. We got Iron Man this week. We got Star Trek Into Darkness next week, like in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And it's going to go from there, and it's going to be a great, great summer for movies. And yes, it's going to be cool. So, that's it for us. Find me on the webs, LW_Silver on Twitter. Carl?
I'm Rubble Minister.
Rubble Minister. He's the Rubble Minister. And we'll catch you on the next time. See ya.
Bye.
End of line.